Chapter 15 Stories. In the evening, the men returned. They hauled fresh meat into the village on wooden sleds lashed together with grass. Udo saw they'd been hunting the dam. Several of them carried quartered down legs over their shoulders while the sleds dragged torsos and heads. Harriman was with them, carrying two legs bound together at the hock, as was appropriate to his station. The women and children came out to greet them when they returned. All stood silently at the edge of the very last hut, waiting for them. None called out, not even the youngest children. They only waited with a patience suggesting they could easily stand at that position for the rest of their lives and not bemoan the waste when they finally expired. Harriman led his men to the village boundary at an easy pace. Udo had never troubled to count their number, but a quick glance suggested at least 20 and probably more. When he reached the edge, Harriman stopped before Ashling, vast chest moving air through him like a bellows. His throat rumbled on each exhalation as if he'd descended from the very beasts his men had slaughtered on the plain. Ashling looked him over, then reached out and smudged a line down his forearm with her thumb. The skin there had been painted red with blood. She looked at this, nodded, and then said certain things to him that Udo did not understand. Then Harriman nodded as well and answered her in his own way, the language of boulders and felled trees and deep-winded horns. He smiled as he spoke, and Udo realized he must be quite attractive to the women of his clan. Udo tried to imagine him with proper clothes, trimmed hair, a manicured beard. In his imagination, he scrubbed the giant clean of grease and grime and blood. In the end, all that was left was a perfectly built, well-muscled man that would make any royal swoon. Some of the men would swoon as well, no doubt, he thought to himself, and Udo could not have faulted them in their admiration. Of all the things he'd never expected to know in his life, chief among them was the shocking majesty of a properly groomed giant. But Harriman was not properly groomed. He was clad in animal hide and, like most of the other men, went around bare-chested under the heat of midday. They only ever donned shirts in the evenings. Despite their ability to grow thick beards, their bodies were almost hairless. There was a light dusting sometimes around their chests, but their legs seldom grew any at all. Udo did not know if the lack of hair upon their legs was a natural development or if the stuff was simply rubbed away by their leather breeches, but he suspected it was natural. Neither the men nor the women grew hair under their arms, as all men and women of Erda had done, and he figured if you couldn't rely on hair under the arms, you couldn't rely on any other part of them to be normal either. When Harriman finished addressing her, Ashling offered a little bow, something so slight Udo would have missed it had he not been looking directly at her. Then she stood upon the balls of her feet, stretched out her neck, and kissed Harriman over each closed eye. The women and children parted for them soon after, and they walked with their men into the village silently. Those of Harriman's hunting party looked at them sometimes, the women or the children. They did this from the corners of their eyes, as if acknowledging their families directly was a violation of some code. There was a large flat stone near the center of the village, about the size of an ox cart. It was positioned a few paces away from the fire pit where they cooked their food and prayed to their gods. The stone itself was brown around the sides with old blood, although the top had been scrubbed clean with water and fire ash and large handfuls of dried grasses. They dragged the meat there, and Harriman, with the help of his sons, transferred the cut-down body of their kill to the stone. Then he produced a flint knife and set to work dressing the body. He took the skin first, cutting expertly along the soft belly so that the organs were not punctured, then lifting the hide from the back while cutting along the inside, fast little flicks of his wrist freeing the inner membrane to jump away from the muscle as if repelled by magic. A small gathering of men and women had formed at each of his elbows, and he blindly passed those pieces he cut away to either side, where they were accepted and spirited off. Skin, then intestine and stomach, spleen, liver, all of these were pulled away and handed off and made to disappear. As he worked, Aisling approached and whispered into his ear. His hands slowed momentarily as she spoke, then resumed their efficient, skilled pace when she pulled away. He took a few more swipes with his knife, then sniffed loudly and brushed a forearm across his cheek where he was sweating. When he looked at Udo, there was a fat smear of blood under his eye where his wrist had been. He nodded and gestured at Udo's chest with his knife, and said many things Udo could not understand. The digger didn't know what to make of this, or what he should do, so he only jabbed himself in the chest and said his name. Udo. Harriman nodded again and repeated the word, Udo. Then Harriman cut a kidney from the animal's body and offered it to him. Udo watched blood drip into the grass for a breath and said, That's a fine piece of meat you're handing over. His stomach growled in response. Since he'd come to stay with them, he'd only been given certain fruits and a kind of porridge they made from the seed pods that grew in the forest, which was filling but bland. The last meat he'd enjoyed had been when he lived alone in his hut on the riverbank.
Udo, Udo,
Harriman repeated, thrusting the kidney forward.
Buichas, he said, and took it.
The other men of the hunting party made approving noises, while Aisling, who stood to the side, held a hand and eyelash away from her thigh and fluttered the first and second fingers at him, their version of a wink. Harriman's own son, Scandlan, took Udo aside and showed him through grunt and gesture the rock he could use to cook his portion when the fire was kindled. He concluded his instruction by raising both arms high overhead and bellowing,
Udo!
A number of the men from the hunting party took up the cheer while Scandlan laughed. He clapped Udo upon both shoulders hard enough to loosen his teeth, leaving bloody handprints. Then, still laughing, he returned to the stone table to help his father. Udo liked him. They spit the bodies and turned them over a fire while the leg meat was carried off to the smokehouse. Then, in the evening, they gathered by the fire. There was a rough circle of boulders nearby. The giants dispersed among these and used them as seats or would lounge upon them. Udo wondered about those boulders. Most of them were as large as a farmer's wain, but their placement was so handy it was as if they'd been dragged there. He didn't believe a giant was strong enough to move those stones, not even Harriman, who was by far the most powerfully built of the clan. But two or three giants? He wondered if two or three might have rolled those boulders along. His good sense told him it could not be so, but then he did recall when a single giant had pulled a flatboat out of the mire. Most of the young were already there when Udo came out to join the gathering. They sat alert with straight backs and wide eyes, while the adults, their parents most likely, though Udo still had trouble understanding who was related to whom, stood apart from the circle. They were out there on the edges, looking in as if they wanted to be there along with the children, yet were held back by some sense of propriety. Perhaps it was simply that they were too adult to show their anticipation. Their young had not yet learned to be sensible and old. Udo suspected they were looked on by their elders with envy. Eventually, no sense of pride or propriety could restrain them. They joined their children in the circle. When all of the giants, young and old, male and female, had settled into the places they liked best, Aisling ventured out and took her seat at the headstone, a fang of granite jutting upward from the ground like one of Erda's own teeth. She sat at its base while the others waited. Udo watched her. He sat in the grass, the boulders being too large to afford him a comfortable seat, and around at the others. All were silent and waiting. They did so many things in silence, he thought,
as if their world taught them there was value in silence, that there was more to be had from listening. Then Aisling began to speak. Udo didn't understand her words any better than when she'd spoken to him before, but he listened anyway. She sounded larger than he was used to hearing, spoke with more weight. She chanted and shook her gnarled fists over the grass when her voice was loud, then would lean forward over her knees and whisper, and the children who surrounded her leaned in as well, eyes wide, never breathing. He saw the adults doing so as well, though they tried to hide it. Udo made eye contact with Scandlon after Aisling had worked herself into a fervor. He'd been leaning so far forward on his boulder he was near to rolling off the edge. When he realized Udo was watching, he sat upright so fast it was as if he'd been struck between the eyes. Then he looked away for the space of a heartbeat, as if it had never happened, and a few moments after looked back at Udo to see if he was still watching. He was. Then Scanlan smiled and covered his mouth to stifle laughter. Many of the words she said passed by Udo like strangers, but there were yet some he recognized. His spine straightened when he heard words he knew, as if recognizing old acquaintances across the alehouse. He understood the names of their gods, mostly, because those had been the first words they taught him formally. He heard An Daetha first, as was proper. They always honored the laughing chieftain first, followed by the mother Anna. Luch and Ceridwen came next, their respective sun and moon gods. Other names as well, names certainly divine, but attached to deities with whom Udo was not yet familiar. Morrigan, Brigid, Camelos, Terranus. The names whirled around each other in the old lady's words, crashing together and separating, then crashing together again. There were screams, the ring of iron and fire in her words. In his heart, Udo heard the ground trampled by thousands of feet, heard generals' cries, felt through his hands the shock of human bodies shuttered to silence, carried to him through a wooden spear shaft. He saw the twisting of windlasses and tumbling stones and bodies rolled downhill and bodies blackened lying motionless in fire and sweat running into his eyes from where it had collected under his helmet, and the ache of his ankles struggling over soft, uneven, rolling, armor-clad footing, the slickness of the sword's grip in his hand, and how he had to hold it so his arm cramped or risk it turning at the last crucial moment. He thought of the quick step and good men he had known and marched with and fought with, finally shitting themselves in death, their final protest before leaving a world that had done much the same to them throughout their whole miserable lives. He heard the blast of horns, saw masses of men ebb and flow together like waves and break upon each other like waves, and smelled the copper in the air and tasted the copper in his mouth. He heard the dying gasp of a Theodiscan man he'd killed. His last living words had been to say thank you. A hand closed over Udo's arm, more precisely around his wrist, though it was large enough to swallow most of his forearm. He looked at the owner. One of the younger men, Udo thought his name was Neil. It was what the others said to gain his attention, at any rate. He looked down at the hand over his arm, but it did not go away. When he looked again at Neil, the giant's face was worried.
"The fuck is your issue?" Udo said.
"Udo?
Come on, knock it off and let me go."
He tugged at his own arm until Neil released it. The giant watched him a moment more, then sighed and returned his attention to Aisling.
"Yeah, that's better," Udo whispered. "You're missing the story anyway."
Udo resumed listening as well. She was speaking of An Daetha again, her arms spread high overhead, reaching out like tree branches. In the evening's darkness, the light of the fire fell upon her form and cast its shadow over the ground. Watching it, Udo thought he saw the giant god himself striding across the world of Talam, laughing thunder into the sky. Then Aisling's voice was overtaken by another giant, a woman whose name Udo had not yet learned. Udo watched the old woman to see if she would be angry at the interruption, but she was not. She seemed gratified as she settled back against her stone, smiling gently, eyes closed and nodding. Now this new woman continued on, speaking in much the same way Aisling had. She said other names he'd heard before, Alma, Angus, and Morrigan several more times, always in conjunction with Undatha. Udo began to suspect they were related in some way. Over and over again he heard the phrase Tuatha De Danann. Not a name, this one. What little command he had of their language told him the words meant something greater than any single god, though he had no idea what. When she was done speaking, a man took up the story soon after. Udo understood very little of what he said, as before, but he heard certain words that he'd learned living among them, the simple things one used to stumble through the day, words such as akris, hunger, blar, fight or conflict, bia for food and ishka for drink, fwil for blood. And many times, through many mouths, he heard baha and bas, life and death. The story passed from giant to giant to giant. Any who wished to speak did so. When Udo began to understand what they all did together, he was amazed. The feeling did not last long. Soon he realized they had all stopped speaking. He looked around at them, confused.
"What is it?" he asked. "Danger? Somebody heard something?"
He had yet to grow used to their fabulous sense of hearing. None would answer him, nor would any meet his gaze. It was as though he'd become suddenly invisible. It annoyed him enough that he thought to demand an explanation, but could not bring himself to do so. The place they were in felt very special to these people, he thought, and he wasn't sure what might happen if he raised his voice to them there.
"What's going on?" he asked himself.
The one sitting beside him, Neil, gently brushed the back of his knuckle against Udo's knee. Udo looked at him.
"What?"
Neil refused to look him in the eye. Staring into the grass and looking quite uneasy, he cocked his head and cleared his throat. Then he nodded toward the general center of their gathering. Right away, Udo understood what was expected and began to panic.
Oh dear, no, you can't be serious, can you?
They all ignored him.
Oh, fuck's sake, I can't even speak the language. I don't know a goddamn thing about your goddamned gods. What could I possibly have to say here?
They all continued to ignore him. All of them except for Aisling. She watched Udo very closely. He nodded at her.
"You've done this to me, haven't you? I ruined your rope somehow, or something. What? What is it? What's turned you against me?"
He thought she might have smiled, but couldn't be sure. When they desired, the giants could make their faces as unknowable as the future. Udo looked into his lap. Nothing there to help him besides his hands. He stared at them, wondering what he would do. Then he finally sighed and shook his head.
Fine. You want me to? Fine. Just fucking glorious. All right, let's see. Well, I guess the first thing I'll say is your kind does it different than mine. Now, I don't have any idea what any of you said. Not even one-tenth of what's been said here have I grasped, except several important names. But I learn a little more each day, and it occurs to me that you people are telling the stories of your gods. And what's more, those stories seem to be changing as each new person picks up the telling. I suppose you wouldn't believe me, but that's interesting to me. Where I come from, they'd whip you bloody for that. If you kept at it, they'd eventually take your head. We had these priests, see? Priests for every god there was. And they would tell us all about our gods, much like Aisling here, but it wasn't permitted for us to say anything back. Not even to ask questions, really. You basically had to sit there and take it, much like everything else in that world. There were many things you had to sit there and take. If you refused, it was they who did the taking. They'd take your property or your freedom, sometimes your life. and so we learned to simply let the priests talk and listen to them and nod our heads like good subjects. And now, watching you all here, you all tell the stories of your own gods. They're not dictated to you. I think the stories must change among you, and maybe that's not so bad.
Udo leaned back, looked to High Country. Then his gaze ran down the length of the cavern to Caridwen, who shined her silver light in the south.
I figure you must be telling each other stories in a way that explains all this strangeness around you. It does seem strange, doesn't it? We never thought about it much in Erda. The world simply was what it was since the day we were born. The people who'd come before didn't make much of the way things were, and they'd been given a story that somewhat made sense. Well, I guess that was enough for us. But watching this clan of giants, I wonder. I wonder if this way maybe isn't better. Maybe the answers you find together are wrong, but then maybe the answers our priests gave us were wrong as well. But here you can be curious. You can ask questions of each other, craft stories to explain the world around you, and there's no one to tell you whether you're wrong or right. No one to whip you. No one to take your heads. I wonder why we didn't do it this way. What was wrong with us? Why did we let them do it to us?
Udo had fallen silent, forgetting momentarily that he was meant to speak his thoughts aloud. When he came back to himself, he looked around the gathering. Every giant there stared directly at him.
We had a chief god, much like yourselves. We called him Godon, and, there were a few other gods as well. We called them the High Nine.
Udo searched for the words that once came so easily, but found his heart wasn't in it. He sighed. Then he raised his arms up high overhead so that they cast long shadows in the grass and said,
Godon was chief among our gods, and he rode around on a big goddamned worm all the time, and, the worm was our world, and we somehow managed not to fall all over our fucking selves as this great creature was supposed to have been flying around all over the place. There.
He lowered his hands.
That's it. God damn you. Now someone else take over. Please.
The giants all nodded as one, and more than a few muttered the word Godon quietly.
Ugh. Shit.